Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Hannah, and I'm a member of the staff team here at St. Michael's. And I also just want to add my welcome to Alison and Adrian and the family and the friends this morning here. It was originally intended that I would do the baptism this morning, but Adrian, who happens to be a surgeon, who does the kind of surgery that I actually had just a couple of weeks ago, rightly knew that I wouldn't really be in quite a great state to do that. So thanks to everybody for their patience for kind of rearranging plans over the last few weeks as I've kind of been recovering for that. But so all I had to manage this morning was the sermon and not the baptism, which I think was probably the right call. He knew. But yes, we're very happy to have you all here with us this morning. I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and like most toddlers, she has some funny ways of talking about things. Many of you know she likes to chat. She's very energetic, but of course, kids, as they're learning to speak, say things in funny ways. And every Sunday morning when we arrive here, or Sunday night, or Tuesday morning when we come to playgroup, we pull up, park the car out the front of the building, and Amber looks out the window and says, "Chatty house! Chatty house!" I don't quite know why she decided to call it Chatty house. We never taught her that that was the name for this place. Perhaps the logic is, you know, we go to lots of people's houses. We go to Grandma's house. We go to Auntie Nomi's house. We go to Annie's house. We go to Nettie's house. We go home to our house. And maybe we come to Churchy house. I don't know. But we arrive and she exclaims every time, "Churchy house." And one morning, Tom and I started to sort of explain to her. We thought, actually, it's not called Churchy house. We were going to kind of, you know, start to teach her, but we sort of looked at each other as we started to talk, and I think we both had the same thought at the same time, kind of shrugged our shoulders, and we thought, you know what? Churchy house is actually not a bad name for this place. I think I'm okay with her calling it Churchy house or Church's house and not just church as we might. Now, maybe she's just a 2-year-old and this is part of language development. Maybe she's a theological prodigy, I don't know. But either way, we realised that Amber had unknowingly actually made quite a vital theological point. Unwittingly hit upon something that many of us, and perhaps especially those who have spent a lot of time in this place we call church, that many of us fail to truly grasp. That church is not this building. And perhaps Amber's word for it helps us remember that church is not the building, but a people. That this is a house for the church, a place where we meet, where we gather, where we learn and grow, but it's not the church itself. The real church is inside. It's the people. In this series that we're working through at the moment, we're looking at this idea of everyday church, what it means to be the church, to be a missional people. There's a whole lot of kind of Christian jargon in there, but it's about being people who see themselves as God's people wherever they are. Wherever you are, whatever you do, the hands and the feet and the body of Christ. For many Christians today, this impetus comes, they think, from necessity, the declining role of church in society, the plummeting reputation of Christianity, the fact that people will no longer just turn up at church by default or assume that it has anything to say to them. For many people, everyday church is a kind of survival necessity, perhaps. But the truth is that this phrase, everyday church, is actually something of a tautology. That is a phrase that's saying the same thing twice. The first word really is redundant. What I mean is, if we really understand the nature of church, or what or who the church is, then eventually we'll figure out that we shouldn't really need to put the word every day in front of it. If we understand that church is not the building, but the people, that church is not just this Sunday gathering, but you people, then we can start to see that the work of the church is everyday work. Your work, your life. I made a couple of little pie charts, and I want to apologise to everybody in the room who is a scientist or is good at analytics or cares for, accuracy or detail. Really, these don't represent anything entirely factual. They're merely just for illustrative purposes. I apologise. But I think sometimes we often think that this is what church kind of is, if you want to represent it on a graph. That the biggest, mostly what church is the big blue section, which is our Sunday gathering. And then maybe you're in a small group during the week, and maybe you have a role at church, a kind of ministry, and maybe you do a few things in your life that you count as kind of Christian acts of service. The problem is, what happens to the rest of your life? Does church have anything to do with it? Where's your life at home? Where's your life at work? And how can it have anything to do with it if church is here and you're out there somewhere? So one of the things that we want to do in this series is to help us see that this here, what we do today, this morning, this gathering, is less important in the scheme of things. Not unimportant, not meaningless, not unhelpful, but less important in the scheme of things. I don't want to get rid of it to say that this isn't church at all, but to say that we need to grow into the fullness of what church really is. Can we have more an understanding of being church that looks a bit more like this graph? Again, apologies, I know that these graphs make no sense. Something more in line with the way you actually spend your time, that accounts for, that includes the stuff of everyday life. The Sunday gathering as smaller in the scheme of things. And so the question then is, what or how is the church here in this big blue section that is everyday life? We've been working through the book of 1 Peter, and Susie didn't love having the job of reading that section this morning. Hearing what Peter has to say to a church in the first century, living in some ways in very different circumstances, but in not altogether dissimilar when it comes to the place of Christianity in their culture. And here's what Peter says about who we are. You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. The biblical view is that the church is, first and foremost, a people. The people of God. Some of the confusion perhaps is justified because in the Greek the word for church is about a gathering of people. Hence we talk about a congregation, those who gather or congregate. But the emphasis in the Greek term is actually not on the congregating together, i.e. the spot where we gather to, but it's on being gathered out of all the different places where we are. That God gathers us or calls us from wherever and whenever we are. And so the church is the collection, if you like, of all the people who follow Jesus, whether they are gathered together or not. Called out by God, those to whom God has shown mercy, and according to Peter, a kingdom of priests. The job of the priest in the Old Testament, of course, was to be the mediator between God and the people, to bring God to the people and to bring the people in worship to God. And it was a role that was restricted to a certain few, people in the right tribe in the Old Testament. But now Peter says the whole people are priests. Every person, every believer, not just in the nation of Israel, but in the suburb of Carlton or in Fairfield or in Brunswick or in Coburg, to make God known to the people and to bring people into worship of God. Now, sounds a little bit like I'm trying to do away with my job. Sunday church is not that important. Everybody's a priest. Where does that leave Steve and I? Not quite. Our gathering together has a good and important function, but it's a function that is seen in the context of a bigger whole. We gather to empower us as we scatter. The church scattered is bringing the goodness of God to the world. If we spend 2 hours a week here in this building and however many other hours a week out there in our lives. So if we think of being church on Monday just as much as we are on Sunday, what does that mean? What does that look like? We know what church on Sunday looks like. We come here, we sing songs, we listen to sermons, we do communion, we do strange things that no one else is doing. So does this mean you start running communion on your doorstep, in your street, or preaching sermons, you know, down the pub? No, Peter says it's much more simple than that. It's much more normal than that, in fact. The instruction is live good lives, and be prepared to talk about why. In our passage, he writes, "Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles," that is, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, as people who don't quite fit anymore in the world, because we've taken on a new identity, an identity in Christ, as foreigners and exiles, live such good lives that though people accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Be good neighbours. Be good citizens. This is the mission strategy. And he goes on to talk about what this looks like in some of the specific parts of life in the first century. The relationship to authorities, to Roman rulers, what it means for slaves, what it means for husbands and wives. And we don't have time really to talk about the details of all of that. I have lots to say about husbands and wives, and you can ask me about that later if you want to. Suffice it to say, in a two-sentence summary, I think that what he writes there is explained by his appeal to submit to what he calls human authorities. And masters and slaves and the Roman rule, no matter how just or unjust, were legitimate human authorities of the day, as were husbands in marriage at that time. And so right living for a Christian at that time was to honour that role. I don't think husbands have the same role in our culture. And so when writing to our culture, I think Peter might say very different things. Our responsibilities to honour the human authorities of our day would not include the authority of husbands over wives. But we can talk more about that later. The gist of the whole thing is this. You live wherever you live, in whatever century, in whatever role, with a missionary purpose. You live to attract people to God, not to turn them away from him. And that's what drives the behaviour of the people wherever they are, whether slaves under unjust masters or wives in the first century. Many people are turned away from Christianity still today, as they were then. Many people are turned away from Christianity today because they think Christians, frankly, are homophobes and bigots. The answer, I think Peter would write to us today, is simple. Don't be a jerk. Don't be a bigot. It's not that hard. It's not your job to tell people what they're doing wrong all the time. It's your job to live the goodness of God. The Christian path is not the path of power over, the path of forcing conformity. It's quiet humility and unrelenting love. And do you notice where in the passage that the mission takes place? It's in the neighbourhood, it's in the home, it's in the workplace, and it's not in the meetings of the church in the building. This is everyday mission. Not simply that you live a good life so that you can invite your friends to come here and learn about Jesus. It's that you live a good life through which people around you will learn about Jesus. So in a culture where Christians were marginalised in the first century, where they were slandered, where they were new and untrustworthy, this is Peter's instruction for how to live. Live good lives, be good neighbours, be humble, be hopeful, be kind, be generous, be free, be faithful, so people will see the goodness of God. Our son started school this year, and before he had even started, I swear it felt like I was getting about 2 emails every day telling me something that I needed to know about what was happening at school. And the fair was on, and I had to bake things, and I had to sell raffle tickets, and I had to volunteer for something, and there was a welcome picnic, and there was a prep parents information night, and there was a something else, and I can't even remember what they all were. And I didn't read half the emails. And I was at a party at my neighbour's house one evening and, you know, complaining about this to someone that I'd just met. And she said to me, "Oh, yes, school is the new church." She said, "School is the new church." And I said, "Oh, that's funny because, you know, I actually work in a church." And anyway, we had a whole conversation. "School is the new church," she said, meaning school is the place where community happens. This is where people are, and this is where community happens. So I made a decision to get involved. And to be honest, quite frankly, the main thing that's required of me is to be available, which lots of people are not these days. So I drop Liam off myself, I pick him up whenever I can, I hang around and I chat to parents. On Mondays I go for coffee with a woman that I've met. On Wednesdays I stay for reading and sometimes go for coffee after that too. There's lots of coffee after drop off, that's what happens. And I invite the kids and the parents to our place after school. We go to AusKick on Friday nights. And there are already jokes about this new little village of parents that we've built. You know, we've got a nurse, we've got a couple of doctors, we've got an accountant, we've got my next door neighbour, he's the tradie, and of course we've got the reverend as well, you know, who's the joke is he's good for the D&M over coffee, that's me. And we've kind of already this acknowledgement of, you know, our little community. If we're asking what does it mean to be the church in the world, what does it mean to do mission in my neighbourhood, this is the answer. Live a good life in this school community, a life that springs from the goodness of God in you. Well, it's half an answer, because what exactly does that life look like? Well, I think that's a work in progress. Who knows how exactly it might turn out, what specific things it will involve. The point is that I'm conscious of doing it and I'm asking God to show me. So perhaps you can fill in the blank in this sentence. for you in your life. Many of your children have grown now and your context is different. Your neighbourhood is different perhaps. What is the new church for your neighbours or colleagues? Where does community happen? Many times I think lots of us just feel stressed and oppressed when people start to talk about evangelism. Maybe you feel like you just don't know how to do it. And what I want to do this morning is hopefully encourage you, rather than oppress you instead, that you already have everything you need to do it. Here it is. You love Jesus, you love people, and you love life. Love Jesus is the most important because without it, none of it works. Being a Christian is not about coming to church, but about being a disciple of Jesus. So rekindle your personal faith. What do you love about Jesus? What drew you to him? Why do you believe? What stirs your heart? What gives you hope? How has Jesus changed you, healed you, grown you? What do you thank him for? Peter writes, always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have. Be prepared to tell your story. You don't have to talk theology. You don't have to be able to present a gospel tract. But you can answer the question, what does Jesus mean to you? And what difference does that make? Love people means actually, you actually have to love them. Not to see them as kind of objects, which much evangelism stuff in the past perhaps has made us feel. There's been a lot of talking but not a lot of listening. And loving people means truly getting to know them. It means listening to them. What do they love? What do they want? What do they hope in? What do they fear? And if you talk about these things, if you know these things, when you share these things, you don't have to make up kind of dodgy segues to talk about Jesus in conversation somehow, because it's already there. These are the things of spirituality and faith, hope and fear, insecurity, loss. Where is God at work in this person's life? And the last one, love life. Just be yourself. Do what you do. Run marathons, knit booties, garden, sing, craft, brew beer, whatever it is that you like to do. Work hard, be a good teacher, be a writer, be a builder, whatever it is you do, contribute to the world. Do it with joy. Enjoy the things that God has given you. A couple of weeks ago, having coffee on a Monday morning, after drop off with my friend, I think it was the day before I went in for my surgery, and we just talked about Easter, we talked about the holidays, and she said to me, oh yeah, we went down to the Catholic Church on Easter Sunday, and my son said to me, oh, so do we believe in heaven? And I didn't know what to say, she said. We got talking about her life growing up in a Catholic family, her faith as a young person, and about some really difficult things that had happened in her life since then. About what had happened to her faith since then, and the questions that she had about God and the church. We're having coffee with 2-year-olds, you know, crawling all over us in a cafe down the street after school. We're about to go down to the library for rhyme time and she's crying and I'm crying and, you know, we're kind of half managing a conversation with crying babies and breastfeeding and all the rest. And, you know, at the end she says to me, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, making you do work. Oh, sorry. And you know, I'm crying and I said, oh, this is not work. There is nothing that I'd rather do than talk to people about the things that really matter. And then off we went to rhyme time at the library, you know. This is everyday mission. That is everyday church. I can do it on Monday morning having coffee with 3-year-old, and you can do it too.